Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's Wednesday and it's 5 o'clock, and if it's Wednesday and it's 5 o'clock and you're tuned in to the Heritage Radio Network, you're listening to me, Phil Colicchio, bringing you the business of the business. And that is the show here on the Heritage Radio Network, where we explore the business side of the hospitality industry. Sometimes we talk about restaurants, sometimes we talk about hotels, sometimes we talk about what goes on cruise ships. And sometimes we just sit here at Roberta's in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, and watch a guy eat pizza with a knife and fork outside the window. That's happening today. If you miss our show live, please go to the website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. Click on to the business icons. Actually, click on all the icons. You can see some of the 50 or so great shows we have on the Heritage Radio Network. A network that is truly blossoming in the communities that care about food, that care about hospitality all around the country. And we're also available as a podcast on iTunes. How about that for being current? Let's get down to business. If you listened to us last week, you met my friend Ted Kilpatrick. And Ted is the beverage director at the rooftop at Park South, which is located on the top of the Park South Hotel at 125 East 27th Street. It is open. It is flourishing while the hotel is under renovation. And Ted is working here in New York, having moved here from Boston, where he was the head honcho at the beverage program at Number 9 Park, Barbara Lynch's iconic restaurant in Boston. And he joined forces here with Tim and Nancy Cushman, the geniuses behind the food and the service at Oh Yeah! Restaurant in Boston. Ted, thanks for making your way back to Roberta's, man.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Are you tired?
No.
Long walk?
No, why would I be?
No, you're not. You're primed, I can tell.
I'm ready.
He's ready to rock. We talked last week about the history of, really, of the barman, of the bartender in the United States, and about the evolution of that role. And we talked about your evolution as well, you know, growing up in Milford, Connecticut. Joked a little bit about how if your first job was opening up a patio bar at the age of 16, is this your last job opening up a rooftop bar at the age of 29?
I
doubt it. Maybe outer space is next. You know, the first bar up on the space station would be nice. I'm sure anybody traveling up there wouldn't mind a cocktail.
They deserve it.
They absolutely do. But this week, I really want to talk to you about the economics of operating a rooftop bar. Rooftop bars had a significant upsurge in New York beginning about 4 years ago. Read an awful lot of economic studies about the benefits, particularly in the hotel industry, to utilizing rooftop space. The city here in New York, which doesn't always make things easy, seems to have bent over backwards to allow for promenades to be built on, you know, what are often the most vulnerable parts of a building, rooftops, to great benefit to the communities. Did you ever run a rooftop bar before?
No, not a rooftop bar by any means. And
I mean, it's different than just running a bar that has seats outside, isn't it?
It is 100% different than running, in my experience so far, basically any other kind of bar.
Talk about it, please.
Well, number one, it was described to me that this would be the case, but being a rooftop bar in Manhattan, people will come, and they have come. And I mean, I get it.
We had a particularly nasty winter.
Yes.
And I think that people are...
We tend to, don't we?
Yeah, well, but I mean, this was nastier than most. This winter hurt people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had blocks of ice on the streets of New York for months and months and months and months. Just the idea, the opportunity to get out was something. And I don't think people have stopped celebrating that sort of first warm day.
Nor should they. It's a small window that in this little corner of the country to celebrate outside, to be outside under the sunshine. I think everybody forgets what a solar cell that we are as people until they start recharging again in the sunshine. It's a responsibility, I think, on anybody that operates outdoor space to try and make that time as meaningful as possible.
So talk about that. You guys, you've made a decision to begin serving at the rooftop at what time during the day?
We start serving at 5 o'clock Monday to Thursday at the moment.
Is there a plan? Are you still in what I would consider the groundlings phase, right? You've been open since when?
We open, well, let's see, I think it's about 9 weeks ago we opened, 9 or 10 weeks ago at this point.
Right.
But definitely still figuring a lot of things out. The goal, and I think you were inclining towards this, is to open on Saturdays and Sundays early for the crowds, to come in and get more of that sunshine.
Right.
That's when people should be up there. They should be getting a tan up there, and that's what I want to see people doing. All we're doing with anything, the food and the beverage, we're not trying to put any of it up on a pedestal. We're just trying to accompany a nice time spent outside with company, with views, with sunshine.
Well, that's and let's not forget moonlight.
It's
actually quite beautiful up there in the evenings.
It is.
What have been the unique challenges to operating a space like that? Let's go right from the beginning. The hotel had not had a rooftop experience before, so you literally have a door person downstairs, right?
Yep.
Did you have to train that? I mean, how did that work? Walk me through it. You're not a club, so it's not like you've got a velvet rope outside and a bouncer with an earpiece.
Well, I will say that managing the door to get in is proving to be an ongoing challenge for us.
Why? Because
people are so excited to come up and see us, and the worst thing that you can do to somebody is say you can't come in. But it's unfortunately, we are frequently in a place where we don't have room for anybody else, and it's not that we are shoulder to shoulder, because that's not what we want to be.
Have you chosen not to take reservations up there?
We started taking reservations. We didn't. I mean, let me rephrase that. When we opened, we took reservations. We've since done away with them, except for private events. So we came to that decision because we were just holding space and people weren't coming. And we just had space that was going to waste, empty seats. We could have gone two ways. We could have made every reservation a credit card or, you know, follow up and chase down the people who didn't come in.
Slightly rude,
though. Exactly. Yeah. So we decided that if, you know, we're lucky enough to have the demand there, then let's cut a piece away. Let's make it more efficient. Let's just say we open doors and we let the people in as they come.
I found that, and it's interesting. I think that the hospitality piece that goes along with an outdoor component, I think that that's the right type of move conceptually for outdoor space. I think indoor space you could certainly get away with the reservation component. I think just because you really are able to control that space your way all the time, right? I referenced the Patterson House in Nashville as one of the best examples of a terrific cocktail bar that works on a reservation system. They don't want people standing elbow to elbow at the bar. They are basically letting their clientele know that they're in for an experience. It's a bit of theater, right? It's a bit of you know, it's a bit of mythology. It's a bit of watching someone, you know, make a fine pair of gloves. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just watching really talented people at work. I think they'd have to do it differently if they had an outdoor component. Mm-hmm. You're finding that you're sort of saying no to people, but are you saying no to them with the idea that says we want you to have a great experience, so we just can't.
The one thing that we're
sardine
trying,
you
exactly exactly, and the one thing that we're trying to utilize is that at the door, it's our last opportunity to say no to somebody, because once they're inside, we speak the language of yes. That's
hospitality is not a no business; it's a yes business.
Exactly, right. And it's also what we have on our side is the reveal. So downstairs, you're walking into a foyer when there's an elevator behind it. If you're told no there, it's palpable, it's swallowable. Like you can, it's fine. Palatable is what I meant to say. And if you get all the way upstairs and you're told no, or you get upstairs and there's a 3 deep at the bar and you're not going to get your drink order taken in time,
you've just been abused.
Exactly. If you waited to get in and then you wait once you're up there, that's a failure in my opinion. Mm-hmm. If you wait to get in and then once you get in, it's everything and more you could hope for. You're greeted warmly as soon as you sit down. Your drink comes in a timely fashion. That's the reveal. The part where you were told, no, I'm sorry, not just yet, because there's not the perfect amount of space for you, that part melts away, and the experience just becomes your time on the roof, your time spent upstairs.
Yeah,
that kind of the, protects that experience.
You're calling it the reveal, and I've heard the phrase, and I like it, the transportative quality mm-hmm. that can be experienced when you walk into a great place from the street. Mm-hmm. And you can't do it by walking through one door 1 second. You literally need to have the experience of being transported from the street to a holding area to the ultimate show.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's why lobbies were created.
Right.
Right. To build anticipation. Mm-hmm. So you're doing that. It's working out from the economic standpoint. You feel by controlling the crowd, you're still making enough money. You're hitting numbers. How's that working out?
We're doing very well. We're out of the gate fairly successful. There's just the demand is there, which is fantastic. I will say it's the harder way to do it. The easier thing to do would be to just let everybody in and to throw our jiggers away and just free pour vodka sodas and. Not that there's anything wrong with a vodka soda, but, you know, the easy drinks, the mm-hmm. ones that aren't screw-upable, and just, you know, be a packed place.
Well, where do you see the rooftop component going, Ted? I mean, is it a fad? Is it a business model that's here to stay? It's you know, how do you manage? Because, of course, you want to eke, even though you want to control the crowds, you want to eke every day that you can possibly eke out being open up there, mm-hmm. right? Again, we talked about where we are in New York City. Mm-hmm. How do you extend the seasons?
You have to look at weather coverage, number one. And then also, once it starts getting chilly, space heaters and that sort of thing, that's probably obvious. But
unless you build fireplaces up there.
Right.
Which you've done.
Which we've done. we're actually in talks with...
the fire department.
We're in talks with some folks who tent things for a living. Tent people are real cowboys. Like if you ask them, they go, oh, you can tent that. You can tent anything. Put a tent on the side of the building if you want.
They always say it. Tight is right.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing. So we're looking at what would make the most sense to tent on the roof to try and extend the season, if even for private events. That's actually right. Something that, as we speak currently, we're in talks try and nail down as soon as possible.
That's great.
Yeah, so that extends the season, if even for, like I said, private events and that sort of thing. In the meantime, certainly, I've never been more of an expert on weather than I have been since the roof opened.
Do you have your Doppler up there? You're like a golf pro in the shop?
Honestly, I've started to just predict weather like an old man, and when my hip starts bothering me a little bit, I think that there might be rain coming, because I've looked at every app, everything. And what it comes down to, when you average everybody's percentages, it might rain, it might not.
That's, and there you have it. That's the way I think Albert Einstein actually thought about it, was could happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Could happen.
So well, what it takes on the daily is sort of not trying to predict the weather, but just being as expeditiously prepared for it as you can possibly be.
Have you drilled your staff when when a squall comes?
I've had friends come and recommend bartenders to me. Like, oh, I have a friend, they're moving to town, they're really great, her tequila knowledge is this, her, you know, she's a really fan of really big fan of rum, she's won this competition. I'm like, how is she with squeegees and tarps? is she good at that? Because that's, we're almost hiring more like ship captains than we are bartenders at this point. But that's it's amazing because we've taken what we
well you
all
know I guess
know
when
do.
You think about it, what do you have a sailboat with a bar on it.
Most of our right? solutions for the physical plant have come from either outdoor stores, like outdoor coolers and that sort of thing, or, you know, boat stores and solutions for things on boats. It's amazing. It's sort of, and I joke that this is like, it is just like high altitude training. You know, it's, if you can do it in the weather on the roof and do it well, if you go inside, it's like, well, this is easy.
Can't wait to see the Gore-Tex staff unis coming out next year. Hey, we're going to take a little break now. I'm here with Ted Kilpatrick, the beverage director at the Rooftop at Park South, one of the really, really exciting new rooftop experiences that a person can have in New York City of a very high quality. If you want to go there and pound Coronas with limes in the neck, I'd probably say, you know, don't rush there. But get there, but don't rush there. If you want to go for a really, really wonderful experience with your friends, with a business associate, I can tell you that it's really one of the great experiences I've seen. Open up in 2014 in New York. Ted, I hope you come back after the break.
I think that I will.
All right. Excellent.
Thanks for listening to this program.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. We support Heritage Radio Network because all you folks listening are so genuine, so dedicated to serious food, so much a part of what this country needs to strive to become. People like you are few and far between, and it's obvious to us at Fairway that we've got to stick together. Our desire is that the word gets out about Heritage Radio Network in its support for serious food, foodstuffs that offer memorability and timelessness, authenticity and rarefied quality. This country grew too fast to have established any degree of a heritage. Europe had centuries to develop one. America has not. Heritage Radio Network serves to hasten the evolution of a society that often appears coarse and uninterested. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com. You can shatter.
Don't do it for anything but movement and location. Ted, that about summarizes what goes on at the Rooftop at Park South, doesn't it? It's about movement and location, isn't it?
So we built it around.
Terrific. So, Ted, you've got this. You got this great job. You moved from the hub to the Apple. You've taken on New York. You've been showing New York what you can do and what Tim and Nancy can do when they're thinking about a hospitality experience. The ownership of the Park South Hotel took a great leap of faith by reaching out for a really unique group to help them put together a hospitality experience on the food and beverage side at the hotel. Exciting things are happening there. But let's roll up our sleeves for a little bit, and let's talk some bar talk, okay? I'm probably running over someone else's show here, but doing it. But I have questions.
All right.
I'm a consumer. I have questions. Why do I have to pay a ridiculous amount of money for Grey Goose vodka?
Marketing.
Tell me how you put yourself in a position of an educator behind the bar by being intellectually honest with your client base about what is going into their cocktail. I sit down at a bar occasionally, I'll order a vodka martini. I like a vodka martini once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I will always get the same bartender say the same thing to me. Grey Goose, Chopin, whatever. I say, no, I want Tito's. I like the way it tastes. That's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Might be less expensive. Is less expensive. I like the way it tastes.
Yeah.
What are you doing? But a bartender's not educating me about that, right? And it annoys me that the bartender's not educating me about that, because it shouldn't always be about selling the highest priced bottle of wine, right?
Right. Well, we've talked a little bit about speed, you and I, in our talks, and a conversation impedes speed. So at a place that's a volume place, what they have is what people ask for. What people ask for is what's marketed to them. So they want to avoid conversation. They want to avoid having to say, we don't have Grey Goose, we don't have Stoli bubblegum flavor, or whatever the new one is. What we have is this selection of spirits. Well, I've never... Exactly. What we have is this selection of spirits that we believe in, that we've tasted through, that we think are the best expressions of themselves for various different price points. To answer your question, I guess, the one thing that I build... Number one, I never tell people that they're wrong for wanting something. And it's very easy for people to think that if you don't carry something, that they're wrong for ordering it. That if somebody walks in and says, I would love a Grey Goose and soda. Well, unfortunately, I'm sorry, we don't have Grey Goose. And I always followed up with, not that it's not fantastic, not that it's not wonderful. We just like to showcase sort of, you know, the synonyms of the big names.
But you actually call it the syndrome, right? That people are so preconditioned.
Yeah.
Right? And you have a responsibility, I think, when you're behind the bar, that I think that your client is not the Grey Goose maker.
Right, but you can't bulldog your way into the Grey Goose drinker and say, we don't have Grey Goose because it's not good, because they're not going to listen to you. Then you've effectively, you know, Grey Goose has won the marketing battle. Enough mm-hmm. people know that they like Grey Goose and order Grey Goose by name, they've won. And if you just tell them that they're wrong, they're going to go somewhere else and get Grey Goose. But if you tell them, no, you're right, like Grey Goose, it's not a poorly made product, it's just too expensive. And the expense
And that's exactly right. I want to make sure that I'm being intellectually honest.
Mm-hmm.
We're not picking on Grey Goose. We're picking it. Grey Goose is a metaphor for this. Grey Goose is an outstanding product, but it's at a price point that I think is unconscionable.
It is. For a spirit that it literally just distilled one day, bottled and sold the next. There's no investment in aging. There's not even any botanicals like you would find in a gin that go into it. It's literally just distillate that's got some fancy water in it that gets sold to Americans at a premium price. And there are as good and better products, in my opinion, that are made in exactly the same way at various different locations that cost much, much, much less. Not just
and
for the
you
consumer.
Use them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it allows you to turn a better, right? Turn a better profit.
Absolutely.
Right? And it's not, you're not cheaping out.
No,
by using the
not.
Seagram's or something like that, something that you like, or a Tito's or something mm-hmm. like that. How do you still like educating that consumer at the bar? I mean, the bar is still really the one place in a restaurant where you can have a conversation
mm-hmm.
with somebody who works there.
Yes,
and who there's this inherent trust that a bartender's fortunate, in my view, because a bartender starts out with, I think, a level of trustworthiness that everyone else in the place has to earn.
They can. But if you've walked up to a bar and order Jack Daniels, and the first thing that I say is, I don't have it, that trust goes away, at least marginally. And then we have to have a conversation. So what I do when somebody comes and asks for something that we don't carry for whatever reason, the first thing I'm trying to do is win them back and try and get them to know that I don't think you're wrong for ordering Jack Daniels. I don't... Perhaps I even go as far as saying, I don't think we're right for not carrying it, but mm-hmm. this is what we have. Try this. I'll tell you a little bit about it. And then eventually, once trust is built, and that's the most important thing is the trust you just spoke of, mm-hmm. then at that point, you can educate. But it can't feel like education, because most people don't go to a bar for an education. They go there and have a drink.
So educate me now, because this is an important question. I'm another consumer question, right? Pet peeve, right? I'm in a busy bar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a customer. I want to be polite. Bartender's ignoring me.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do as the customer in order to express that I am patient? I see that you are slammed and working hard, but you won't give me any eye contact. and it's bugging me. Oh. What? Tell me about... These are consumer questions that have bugged me for years.
Yeah.
That one bugs me.
Well, I would go to another bar.
Right. Do you train? I mean, when you're training somebody and the bar is slammed and there are people who do... I've heard all the things don't do. Don't wave the $20 bill. Don't, you know, mm-hmm. don't wave the $100. You know, don't keep saying, excuse me, mm-hmm. you know, don't do all those things.
Sure.
But at some point I got, if I'm not getting some eye contact from somebody, it's rude.
Well, patience and eye contact are the only thing I could tell you to do. If you're not rewarded with at least acknowledgement, then it's probably another bar is the answer.
Okay.
So because something's either going wrong at that moment at the bar and they're way too busy for how many people are there, or something went wrong in the training. And quite frankly, I don't want to be at either of those bars.
Okay. All right. Like I said, thought I might have been doing something wrong.
No.
And all right.
For me, one of the paramounts for the training that we give our bartenders is to always be looking at everything top down. And what that means is eye contact first. Second, the bar top itself should be clean. It should be tidy. People are eating and drinking on it. Then after that comes all the work you do below the bar, which is making sure that you're stocked up, making sure the dishes are being done, making sure that you're working cleanly, which is usually important. But number one, always, your eyes should bungee back up to the topmost reference point, which are people's eyes. Eye contact acknowledgement is always priority number one. Everything else should come after that.
What's the optimum width of a bar? In your
width between the guest and the bartender?
Between the guest and the bartender, yeah. I think that's hugely, again, back to these things that are very, very subtle,
mm-hmm.
yet hugely important in my view. And I think a big component of the economics, right, is the more comfortable you are,
mm-hmm.
the more likely you're going to spend your money, spend more time,
mm-hmm.
right, feel more part of the universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's that optimum distance? I mean, you strike me as a guy who thinks about this stuff.
Well, what I would do, it really, I certainly do think about it way more than I probably should, but there's not one answer for that, I don't think. There's a lot of variables. I would, if I were opening a bar...
You're designing, Ted's bar.
Right. Well, it depends on what plates we settle on, what wine decanters we settle on, what silverware we settle on, if there's going to be anything else on the bar top. Am I utilizing the bar top for, you know, displaying my bitters? Is there going to be any sort of, you know, a little something where I can have, how big is my drink-making space going to be? How much is that going to eat into the guest's space? And I would take all of those small wares and just put it on the bar as if I have ordered everything that I could possibly have in front of me at one time. Am I still comfortable? Can that person be waited on? The other thing that comes into play is how much equipment can you keep on your back bar versus how much needs to be under the bar itself. And if it's a whole lot, then you want more bar to cover up the unsightly equipment. So there's a lot of different answers to that. And I think that I think
a messy bar is a sin. I think that it's
absolutely.
I for it to be a holding pen for other things, I've seen many times. That's in my estimation, that's a cherished space.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you view it that way. I know that your team views it that way, which is really why I'm encouraging the dialogue here and encouraging people who are listening,
mm-hmm.
you know, to check this out. And that the next time you're at a bar, really think about what you're seeing. Think about how you're being treated when you're not being spoken to.
Mm-hmm.
Do people know that you're there and breathing? You know, are they anticipating, right, what your concerns are?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that's the hallmark of any great server, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is the concept of anticipation. Okay. So, you're an experienced bartender. I'm at the bar. I am talking to my significant other. The fella next to me is being intrusive. Is it my job as the guest to tell him to knock it off? Or is it your job at the bar to notice it and resolve it?
It should be... Personally, I would take it on myself.
As the bartender?
Yes.
Okay.
I've told my bartenders in the past that in a situation like that, I guess I would layer that with there needs to be an unspoken communication between you and the bartender.
Well, at some point, right, we're not talking about the drunk necessarily,
right,
who's out of line.
Mm-hmm.
Right, what we're talking about is it's not necessary. If you are seated somewhere and there's an extraordinarily noisy table next to you, right? I mean, you wince.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you might, and you're not. You want everybody to have a great time if you're a normal human being, of mm-hmm. course. But like, this is like really being intrusive now.
Right. Well,
it shouldn't be me at the table.
No,
in my view,
certainly not.
Who's taking up arms?
Right.
Right, and saying, "Hey, knock it off."
The table is a little bit of a different dynamic,
yep,
because at the bar, sometimes people are open to starting conversations with strangers, and that's why I say that there needs to be an added layer of nonverbal communication. And I would always test the waters by distracting said interloper,
mm-hmm,
and to, as I've put it in the past, kind of just fly a kamikaze mission at them and just say, I'm going to take this person on completely. I'll even go as far as to tell my other bartenders, I'm going to be out of commission for a little bit. I need to take this on directly.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who's talking to you, without your necessarily wanting them to, wants conversation, whether it's, you know, for whatever reason. And it's not your job to have that conversation with them. It's the bartender's job. So the bartender should intervene, and then I've always looked at the guest who I'm trying to save for some sign of either thank you or a wave of the hand saying, it's okay, we don't mind talking to him.
Okay.
So I've always interrupted, you know, nicely, done anything, offer a menu to this gentleman who's talking too much, ask him where he's from, ask him if he's from out of town, which then would at the very least give you as a couple who's being interrupted the opportunity to maybe adjust your position a little bit, to box him out, to give some sign to him or to me that that was a welcomed interruption.
Yeah, I guess I expect more, right, from the professionals behind the bar.
Mm-hmm. You should.
Right, that see this every day and that can intervene and can intercede. And we're not, again, we're talking about the subtle differences. You know, if someone's stumbling and falling and breaking glassware, you know, that's pretty easy.
Right.
You know, but it's that moment in time when the experience that you're trying so hard to provide is being sabotaged,
mm-hmm,
right, by someone who may be doing what they're doing in perfectly good faith and
right,
clear conscience.
I've always said that what we are above anything else are protectors of a very important evening out, even if it's not to celebrate anything.
You are the head of spirituality at your place, aren't you?
They got my eyes on the wrong things.
The protectors of hospitality.
Sure.
We need to have some form of crest.
We do.
Like
we just
that.
Can't talk about it.
The protectors. I kind of like that. Well, I think we at least have to think about naming a cocktail after those centurions.
Sure.
Right up there. Ted, this has been great. I think it's every American boy's dream to own and operate a bar. You know, at some point, right? Because you just think this is a place where people can have a really good time and be together. The fact that you take that obligation to heart of creating an environment like that is more than refreshing. It's it's faith verification, you know, in my book, that somebody's looking out for something that's really sacred out there. It's hard, you know, life's pretty hard, right? If you have a couple hours of a good time during the week,
it's all the difference.
It really does.
I mean, it's a fun thing to have to know about.
Bingo. You got a great situation over there at the Park South, 125 East 27th Street. Please stop by and see Ted. Say hello to Ted. Ted Ted will not be wearing a bunny suit, I believe, on the rooftop at Park South, even though I know that he's won a couple of very important mixology contests wearing said bunny suit.
Just one with that one. Then I retired it.
Good idea. But visit Ted, but visit your local as well, and pay attention to how your bar's managed, and pay attention to how your bartenders are working. And can't end the session without saying, don't forget to tip your bartender. All right. Ted, thanks a lot for coming out.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Why don't we have a little pizza here?
Yes, sir.
And maybe go have a cocktail at the roof.
That sounds lovely.
All right. Thanks.
Heritage Food.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. In those they have-